Hey there, welcome to another Truth Talk. I'm your host, Jessica Hoddle, and this is where we have real, raw, and honest conversations about life. I'm really excited about Rebecca Bender being back on the podcast. We talked a lot about human trafficking, her story, sex trafficking in episode in November, which I will link below. But today, this month, is actually Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And this day, which is January 11th, is actually Human Trafficking Awareness Day. So the whole month is to bring awareness, but today is a specific day. So of course, it's a perfect day to have Rebecca Bender on, who is the founder and CEO of the Rebecca Bender Initiative. She is an award-winning, nationally recognized expert on human trafficking. When you hear her talk, you know that she has not only lived this life of being trafficked and sold, but you also hear a woman with full of wisdom to share with us so that we can learn how to also better show up, serve, bring awareness, how we can have a part in this conversation, how we can literally begin to shed light on the world of human trafficking. In this episode, there are a lot of resources that she mentions, and I just want you to know that everything she mentions is in the show notes below for you to have easy access to and to link and click on anything that you feel called to research and learn more about. Let's go ahead and get to this conversation with Rebecca on this Truth Talk as we debunk myths on human trafficking. Rebecca, I'm actually so glad that you're here for a round two. You know, the first time we really talked about your story and we were talking at the end of the last episode and I was like, can we have you back? Because you were talking about awareness in January. And I was like, this is definitely a heartbeat of mine. So why don't you just briefly share who you are in case this is the first time somebody's hearing you, and let's talk about what does it mean to be January right now and the Human Trafficking Awareness Month.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so honored. My story is one of overcoming human trafficking myself. And so those of you who didn't get a chance to listen to that first episode, we want to encourage you to come back and listen to Jessica's first one on just sharing more of my story. I was lured off a college campus as a young single mom, 18 years old with a little girl, and forced into human trafficking for nearly 6 years until we were able to finally escape. And we shared a lot about that on the first episode. And then I was able to run and kind of start your life over with nothing. And that journey to really find my lane and find my place and my voice in this fight against trafficking has taken me down a lot of paths. And I'm excited to get into that today and share a little bit more about different ways that people can get involved, things I've tried and failed at, and things I've tried and have gone really well. And so we want to encourage people to do something, that everyone can do something. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about this issue. I've now been in the fight against human trafficking for almost 13 years. So you're thinking between 6 and 13, that's almost 19 years total that I've invested my whole life into this. And I get to travel the country and speak and train law enforcement and FBI and prosecutors and vice schools. I also created the largest online school for human trafficking survivors in the world. So we get to walk out dreams and birthing dreams with women, which is so great. And I'm able to take the stand and testify at a variety of trafficking trials, actually, as a human trafficking expert. So it's been a journey that I'm so grateful to God for, and that there's purpose out of your pain and a message out of your mess and all the things.
I love it. It's so good. You can just tell that there's just so much wisdom coming from me when you speak about this. And it just makes me like just so happy, like just because God's just that good to like take all that, like you said, the mess, and just, I like to call it a beautiful mess, and just turn it into something. Let's talk about the history of Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Do you know when it started? Why is this an awareness? What should we be paying attention to? Those kind of things.
Yeah, you said I have all this wisdom. Now there's all this pressure. My Jeopardy questions, right?
I set you up.
No, you know what? We actually do have I teach a class called The Evolution of Exploitation. And while I don't know the specific first date and date that human trafficking awareness was put into practice. I will say that fighting human trafficking has been going on for a very long time, but some of the first places that started doing it was author Julie Bendel. She wrote a book in the 80s, Morality in the Media, which now is known as NACOSI, the National Center of Sexual Exploitation, also started in the early 80s. And then it kind of migrated. IJM started, and then the TVPA passed in 2000, and it's been reauthorized several times since then. It's been reauthorized by every single administration. So I know people, you see people politically that are like, so-and-so's done this. I'm like, every single administration has done something for trafficking. And I'm grateful because it shows that it's a bipartisan issue. Everyone wants to help end the sell of children and young women and young men for sex. And so, yeah, Trafficking Awareness Month was called into, I guess, officialness. I don't exactly know what year, but it's usually a designated month where people are upping their efforts to learn, to get educated, to promote different events in their city, different laws that are being passed. Almost every state has probably made a proclamation by their congressperson that January is officially Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so those are some really great events that a lot of nonprofits in your community are probably doing in January. It'd be great for you to find out who your local nonprofit is, your local task force, find out who were behind any efforts to pass Safe Harbor in your state. They're probably celebrating that down. We see a lot of candlelit vigils at courthouses during Trafficking Awareness Month, specifically on January 14th, which is the National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. So you'll see a lot on the 14th. I don't know. Does that help? That's a little bit
off
the top.
No, no, that's good. Is there any specific websites that people can go to? Because I know for me, I had asked an organization that I partner with, hey, can you like vet these? Because obviously we want to make sure that, I mean, who knows what's on the other side of the screen?
Man,
is there anything to look for or specific websites that you know that can be trusted to help find things in your area?
This is a tough question because human trafficking as an issue is pretty new in terms of other social justice issues. And so we don't have a ton of oversight and accountability that maybe domestic violence, you know, the Department of Domestic Violence or the Victim of Office of Crimes has now started to do a lot more oversight with human trafficking. But it's so new that you unfortunately do see some fraudulent behavior with counter trafficking groups. And I think knowing what to look for and some signs to make sure that you're partnering either with your time, your energy, your share, your clicks, or your money is with an organization that really is doing great, great work. I don't think there's one website that is vetting everyone for everyone. Unfortunately, I wish that could get funded. I'd be happy to sign up for the job. Sign me, human trafficking. I'm kidding. Don't send me hate mail. But I think, you know, getting involved in with the local groups that are doing great work, you'll see for yourself with time. Get involved, start, you know, being a part of what they're doing. And as they continue to grow, you get to watch that evolution. And not everyone knows everything, right? I remember a mentor telling me, you can't be so arrogant that you expect everyone to become an expert the first time they hear about this issue. And you need to give people the same amount of time it took you to really learn about this topic. And so there's a difference between groups not knowing better and accidentally or going, oh, wow, I wish I would have known that. I won't do it that way next time. And then there's intent to defraud or intent to, they've been told that that's harmful and they still will continue to do it because it raises money for them. And those are things you want to look for over time.
That's good. I know I learn a lot from you every time we talk, because I know the first time you were talking about exploitation and trafficking and they're so easily mingled together. And you just were like, no, they're actually different. And I was like, oh, like just little things that you pick up as you continue to go on. So I want to get into some myths because that's what I really want to talk about. And one of them you were recently talking about when it is about kidnappers and captivity. And you were talking about this percent, about 5% are actually kidnapped. If they're not kidnapped, how then is this happening? You know, because again, people are like, well, they're just getting kidnapped. And we talked about, you know, the movies and, well, you know, if this person isn't kidnapped, then maybe I shouldn't be looking for it. Can you speak truth into this myth?
Yeah, we're seeing this so much. And I know there's a variety of reasons, both psychological, marketing, and sociologically that make us this cocktail to really fuel this myth that I think is moving forward at rapid rates right now. And what I think is important for people to remember is, you know, several years ago, the FBI came out with a statistic that said less than 5% of trafficking cases that they've been involved in have been kidnapping, less than 5. According to the National Center of Exploitation, less than 0.1% have been kidnapped. And so people might have heard that stat just now and ask, well, how does she know that? Well, those are the two places that I've heard those from and read about that. We have to remember trafficking is a crime. Trafficking is selling a product over and over and over without re-upping their supply. And so when you think like a criminal, the question becomes, how do I make this product sellable? What's my low risk? What's my high reward? And we did an interview a while back with John Cotton Richmond. He's the ambassador to the White House for human trafficking, the Office of Trafficking in Persons. Mm-hmm. And he shared, I thought it was brilliant. So I'm going to quote him here. He shared, why is it that really high-end neighborhoods have less rates of robbery than low-income neighborhoods have higher rates of robbery? It's because it's less risk, right? And so it's a similar mindset. What's going to be more risk? Grabbing a child out of a shopping cart where parents are running, security might be shutting the door. You've got this, you know, this baby screaming and screaming and screaming, or a five-year-old. Is that product sellable? Is that sexy for buyers? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, we have to think about the criminality of it, because I think when you understand the criminality, it helps you to understand predatory behavior.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say, what's sometimes easier and less risk for traffickers is identifying teenaged young adults. So 16 to 24 is a fairly targetable age, vulnerable, at risk, gives into peer pressure. And the boundaries start getting tested and the temptation starts getting pushed little by little by little. They develop a relationship, they expand their boundaries, and they test them. And that's how they determine who to focus their efforts on. They might be doing that with 4 or 5 people. And the one that might be willing, maybe for a variety of reasons, I'm one of those girls. My boundaries were pushed easily. I grew up in a home where I had an aunt that was a dancer and my roommate was a stripper. So like commercial sex wasn't a big deal for me. I just thought that was kind of normal. I had, you know, higher ACEs than other kids. And so there's all these vulnerabilities that come into play with people's boundaries. And I was taught stranger danger. I wasn't taught, come to me when your boundaries are pushed. Right? We didn't talk about that as a 14-year-old girl going off to my first high school party. My mom didn't have those conversations with me. And so that's why these kinds of messages that you're doing today, Jess, they matter, because we want parents listening to start talking to their kids about, what does that mean, my boundaries pushed? What does that mean, I'm being tested? You know, don't just teach stranger danger. Predators for trafficking are way more conniving and manipulative, and they lure. They don't generally snatch and grab.
First of all, everything that you're saying, I was like, it's so good, because we've been taught, like you said, okay, if a car comes up, run, you know, like if some creepy guy comes up in a car, that stranger danger. I've never been taught to look for the, you know, what is he saying? How is he saying it? What are you doing? And I love that you brought up that it's actually just relationship, because I know you ended up getting trafficked because of relationship and you shared that story. And I don't know how many of us really think that it could be starting out as a dating, quote unquote, relationship, and this person's actually in it for something more.
Totally.
And that is a huge flip that we need to address, like you've been doing, about boundaries with people. And
I mean, look at the movie Frozen. That's what Hans did to Anna, pretended to be something he was not, fast-tracked a relationship. Family said it wasn't good. She went through it. Like, those are examples we can use with younger kids, you know. Yeah. Even with older situations, we had something happen here in our small area recently. And a friend called me. My friend said, were they trying to get my kid? Like, what's happening? And my friend's a guy. He's tatted up, tats from the neck down. And I was like, tell me what happened. And he tells me again. And, you know, we live in a high, what we call grow area. So recreational and medical marijuana, lots of crops here. We have dispensaries on every corner, like Starbucks. And so what was actually happening was just simple robbery, just simple robbery. And I know that sounds hard for like, no, carjacking still happen. Mugging still happen. Not all of those are trafficking related. It's not that they're trying to grab your kid out of the back seat or find your address in the glove box. It is, you looked like a target because you had cash and he thought you were probably a thug and you were going to call the police and they approached you at the car to rob you. It's like we've swung the pendulum so far where now every crime is trafficking. And you're like, calm down, simple robbery. I mean, nothing simple, but you know, what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. And I'm really glad that you're talking about this because again, it's flipping the narrative. It's getting us to see because we'll miss out on it every time. Because we're driven by emotions, especially now in 2020, where, this is released in 2021, but in 2020, where we didn't see people. And so we're vulnerable. I think we're more vulnerable in 2020 than we've ever been with pain and emotion. And I think that's really probably way more susceptible, right, to a trafficker to play on those vulnerabilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was watching, to kind of piggyback on that, I was watching a victim testimony video, and I can't remember what website it was on, but maybe it was Our Rescue or something. And she was talking about how she would meet for dinner at a dinner table just to have dinner with these people that she thought was her friend. And then over time, she ended up getting trafficked. And I think that paints a picture of what you were saying. It was just the fact that she would go to dinner with her friend and this relationship was being built. And then she had no clue what it was going to turn into.
Yeah, Shared Hope International has a really great prevention curriculum called Chosen. And Chosen shares, a girl shares her story. Her name's Brianna. Brianna shares her story of waiting tables. And a couple would come in every Sunday and order the same thing and ask her, you know, what are you into? Oh, you're going off to college. Where are you going? What do you want to be? Da, da, da. Well, they were actually scouters and they were giving information to a trafficker, this average looking couple. And then she thought it was fate. Oh, we're going to the same school. Oh, we have the same interest. Nope. They targeted you. And we work with another child, the CSEC coordinator. CSEC stands for commercial sexual exploitation of children. The CSEC coordinator for Child Welfare of Oregon. She shares how our social media is giving traffickers a ton of information like, oh, you like the Chicago Bears? Me too. Like, nope. He just looked at your Instagram. He doesn't actually like that either. So we just have to be more thoughtful around like issues of catfishing mixed with vulnerabilities of kids, mixed with criminal thought patterns. You know, trafficking, although it's not an isolated or siloed crime, it does have its own unique fingerprints that are important for us as parents to know and learn so we can keep our loved ones safe.
That's so good. So good. Let's go to number two, which is this myth that trafficking requires a sex act. Tell us about that.
Okay. So when you're talking about is sex required for trafficking? The answer is no. There's any attempt to purchase for one, any attempt, which is great. But the other thing people think of is sex trafficking is only like prostitution, for lack of better words. And that's also not true. Any form of stripping, pornography, any means of commercial sexual exploitation is considered. If there is a third party perpetrator profiting off of your sexual exploitation, that's considered trafficking. It doesn't just have to be someone's been forced into prostitution, and it can be an attempt to force someone into prostitution that can also end in a lawsuit. But what we look at when we look at the law, it's called act means purpose. So the act of recruiting, transporting, transferring, harboring by means of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of some form of commercial exploitation or labor, right? When we talk about trafficking, it's not just sex trafficking. There's labor trafficking, organ trafficking, sex trafficking, and sometimes labor and sex can be happening at the same time in the same situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's good. We got it. I was like writing it down. It's act of by means of, for purpose of. That's
exactly
good.
The act of recruiting, transporting, harboring, talking, luring, all those things by the means of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of any form of commercial exploitation, stripping, pornography, prostitution. So it's forced labor, domestic servitude, agricultural, withholding pay, poor living, all of those things. So recruiting, transferring, harboring by the use of force, fraud, or coercion, the purpose of commercial exploitation.
That's good. Love it. Let's just go right to number three. this myth that are that all girls, you know, they're just choosing to be there.
Yeah. Some girls want to be there. They want to be involved as sex workers.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Oh, this is such a one to unpack. And obviously, small shameless plug, we have these trafficking truths as our free e-course on our website. So spend a whole hour with experts from all of these topics, really doing a deep dive. I know you and I are hitting kind of the cliff notes of each one, but please know there is a deep dive in each one of these myths on our website. But the thing to unpack about choice, which I think is so important, is what got someone there? And that's very rarely a question we see when we say, well, I know a couple girls that want to be there. I want to say, do you know their childhood? Do you know what happened to them when they were little? Have you asked them? Have they talked openly about any type of childhood or lack of education or lack of opportunities? There's this phrase called systemic prostitution, which means, like, I was talking to a young woman recently and she said, oh, I want to be here. I want to do this. I'm a sex worker. She said, my mom was in trafficking. I know what that looks like. I said, wait, what do you mean? Tell me more. Your mom was in trafficking. Well, my mom was a prostitute. My dad was her trafficker. And so that's how I was born. And when I was the age of 10, I was starting to be groomed for trafficking, but I ran away and now I do it on my own. I'm empowered. I'm this empowered sex worker. And I'm like thinking, are you hearing yourself right now? This actually wasn't your choice. And you might tout that from a microphone or from a newscast at 22 years old, but what you're not sharing is that whole layer of desensitization, of grooming, of familial exploitation, of cycles of poverty and abuse that were mirrored for you and modeled for you in your home. I just feel like there's this whole underlying thing that people are not aware of. And when you're tackling the issue of prostitution, whether you're there by choice or force, choice air quotes, we have to be thoughtful around, this is gender-based violence. This is violence against women. This is targeting and making women's bodies accessible for men's use and discard like an object. This is an industry that is extremely dangerous and violent. High rates of homicide, high rates of suicide, high rates of rape and PTSD. That's not something you want to legalize and is empowering. You live in that kind of prolonged state of fear, even if you think you're there by choice. You live in that kind of prolonged state of fear that you're playing Russian roulette 10 times a night. You have no clue what's going to happen on the other side of that door or that car. You do not come out the same. That is not empowerment. And I don't think people realize we can't talk about the empowerment of sex work on one hand and then fight for the equal rights of women and fight to end people like Epstein and Weinstein objectifying and forcing women into doing things, or teenagers, I should even say, with Epstein, not Weinstein. But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. We can't have it both ways. This is a dangerous, dangerous slippery slope. And I think we need to be real thoughtful around quote unquote choice.
Yeah. Okay. Can you talk a little bit about this whole Me Too movement where you were sharing this on your Instagram and it's talking about how it's going to push to help buyers, traffickers, and brothel owners?
Yeah, there's a law that's going around. Many states are considering it. It's called decriminalization. And there's a lot of people that are pushing for full decrim. That's the phrase that's known, full decrim. I think there's 7 states right now that have put decrim, full decrim on the ballot. DC just got it. They did not pass it, thank God. But this is something that I think is following on the tail end of legalized marijuana, is this full decriminalization of prostitution. And what I think is important for people to know, if you could see me, I have my hand up. I call it our hand model. And it's actually also on our Instagram, on our Elevate Instagram page. But our hand model, it talks about there's 5 areas of decrim. There's buying 1, selling 2, pimping, pandering, procuring as the 3rd finger, brothel owning as the 4th, and then human trafficking. And so what decrim does is there's this split where everyone wants human trafficking to remain illegal. But what full decrim will do is it will decriminalize 4 other lanes: buying, selling, pimping, pandering, procuring, and brothel owning will be fully decriminalized. And this is in an effort to not arrest people for prostitution, not make it difficult for those that are being marginalized and are choosing quote unquote sex work. And so what's happening is there's this huge divide within the these industries. And Me Too decided to partner and stand in agreement with full decrim, which is so scary for us as human trafficking advocates, because partial decrim, or what's known as the equality model or the Nordic model in the US, which is what most human trafficking advocates are in favor of, it will decriminalize the selling. So if someone is there by choice or force, it won't continue to arrest the victims, but it will still hold buyers, brothel owners, pimps, panderers, and procurers accountable for their actions. I mean, can you imagine if your next door neighbor was a brothel while your little girl is doing sidewalk chalk? You've got buyers in and out of your neighbor's house coming in to buy sex. And again, prostitution and human trafficking are not isolated crimes. You're going to see increases of domestic violence. You're going to see gangs. You're going to see drugs. You're going to see, you know, oftentimes organized gang behavior. You're going to see all sorts of additional crimes that will come with your neighbor, the brothel. And so then what? People say, we'll pass laws where we won't have brothels in my community. Okay, so your town will be the next red light district, like Amsterdam? Is that what we're going to have? We're going to have 7 red light districts in America? Is that where we're going? And so it's really scary to think that there's this push for full decrim. And I would encourage everyone to visit equalitymodelus.org. Learn more about the equality model. Make sure that we're voting for laws that and policies that are going to support not arresting victims, but absolutely holding other perpetrators accountable for their actions.
So basically, long story to short, to make this short, is you're saying that it's going to be legal for them to have brothels and to be a prostitution if they want, and no accountability to that third party.
If full decrim laws pass, none have passed yet, but just this is the push. Me Too movement is standing in support of full decrim. We had a private meeting with them. We begged them not to do this. We talked about the violence against women for even people involved in the sex industry. They still decided to go in support of full decrim and not hear the voices of survivors of trafficking. I know I was in that meeting and we were shocked that Me Too has decided to stay in support of full decrim, which will, if passed in a variety of states, every state's going to have their own decrim policy. This won't be a national push. So learn your state laws, learn your state legislators, learn what ballots are getting on the books. These are sometimes put into health bills. It looks like a community health bill. Sometimes they'll slip in full decrim as a bullet point into a larger bill. It's really important to read it. Don't just read what your friend is resharing on Instagram. Go read the bill. Go read through the bullet points. They're usually just a couple pages. It doesn't take long to educate yourself. We have to get smart. Otherwise, we're going to see a very different country for our kids.
Yeah, man, that is, I'm really glad that we talked about that, because I mean, the Me Too movement really started off of women coming out, right? Of sharing their story of either being trafficked or, you know, exploited or whatever it was. And now it's almost like this organization is almost just wanting it, if it goes full decrim, to say, well, it's okay. They chose that. And now we're not going to hold that third party accountable. Is that correct?
Well, the hard part with Me Too is that they want to keep women safe. They want to keep anyone safe from sexual assault. And you can't do that in an industry of prostitution, because the industry itself is violence against women. And so in an effort to not criminalize people that are choosing sex work, truly choosing sex work as their only form of being able to take care of themselves, I don't think they're realizing that they're now also decriminalizing buyers who are very violent. I experienced just as much violence by the men that bought me as the men that sold me, just as much. And so you're just launching a full decrim on buyers? This is shocking. Full decrim on brothel owners? I mean, this is where people are being trafficked, labor trafficked, and then forced to live in really inhumane conditions in order to turn tricks all day. This is not, we shouldn't be decriminalizing this. It's shocking. And so I think we all at the end of the day want the same thing. We don't want victims of trafficking to continue to be arrested. We don't want those who are choosing sex work to constantly be put at risk for arrest and records that are going to make it even harder for them to get jobs when they choose to get out of sex work. We both want that. Let's stick with the equality model. It's the one thing we all agree on. And yeah. Let's move the nation forward to actually make some change in helping victims arrested for prostitution. But at this point, it's not there. There's this big divide between full decrim and equality model.
I think for me, two questions that come to my mind, like what's the actual percent of people that actually quote unquote choose it versus, I mean, it has to be staggering, you know? And then how do you say to somebody that they're choosing versus being told that they're choosing? Like, because if you're in trauma and fear, you don't really know that you're actually choosing it. You're just being manipulated and deceit. So for me, those are the questions that come to my mind.
Oh, good. Such good questions. I don't know there's any exact statistic out there that's identified what percentage of people feel like they're choosing it. I know that the majority of people that are very loud about choice tend to be the minority. You know, you're not seeing a lot of traffickers allow their victims to go on CNN and be like, well, I'm not here by choice. You know, like you're not getting to hear the other side ever. So it's kind of interesting. And second of all, the University of Northern Colorado, through a group called the Avery Center, is actually doing incredible research that they've been talking to lots of survivors of human trafficking, like myself. Yeah. And they'll ask, when you were being trafficked, would you have considered yourself there by choice, sex worker by choice? Yeah. And all of us are like, yep. That's the brainwash that we believed that we were in this empowered situation. And then years separated from your trauma, therapy is done. You're out of that industry. And now you hear them say, we were there being trafficked. And so it's really hard to hear in the moment of someone's trauma, is that coming from a lens of trauma or is it coming from truth? I don't know. And I'm not going to say that people's truth isn't their truth by any means. But I know for me, I would have called myself an empowered sex worker while I was being trafficked. Mm-hmm. And so that can really skew statistics.
I think that's my biggest thing is, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And that's almost like what we're just saying here is you don't know that you were sharing that story about, she said, you know, she left your parents and then chose herself. Well, she doesn't know what she doesn't know. Right. And she thinks she's empowering herself. I don't know. That's just really good. Thank you for sharing all of that. I mean, I know those questions about percent, it just, to me, again, I look at the trauma because, you know, we come out of these different homes and you look back and go, man, like I didn't see it then, but I see it now. And as you, as a survivor and expert, you're trying to get almost these people like in it to say, but when you come out or if you come out or when you come out, I think you'll have different. And you're like fighting kind of almost the pain and trauma and deceit of the traffickers and the industry itself to say, but here's the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's two other survivors who talk a lot about the influence of culture that it had on them. Holly Austin Gibbs, who wrote a book called Walking Prey, and Centoya Brown Long, who wrote, I think Centoya's Brown is called, it's called Free Centoya. And it's both of them talk about the influence of culture and how just that peer pressure as a young person. And when you haven't had a ton, when you have high ACEs, which stands for the Adverse Childhood Experience Study. Yep. So when you've had desensitization to violence in the home or abuse or poverty or mental health, race, all of these things that can actually cause you to have some vulnerabilities. And then you mix it with the influence of culture in today's age. And it's just this really big concoction that makes it a little bit easier on traffickers to lure their victims, not kidnap.
Yeah.
It's all of it. It's this big cocktail, right? Of like, where do you begin fighting it all?
Yeah. And I think now we're trying to, if we're just going to go gospel a little bit, we try to accept people's sin and we try to make it okay. You know, because we obviously all sin, but we have a new nature in Christ when you accept Jesus. But it's now we're just kind of packaging, like, you know, we think of jealousy. It's like, well, it could be really great, right? Like we just kind of package things up and we're like, well, like let them do this and let them do that. And I think that you're just fighting the good fight. Like I said, I just pray wisdom over you and I pray favor over you when you go into those courtrooms and you have those meetings that people hear what you have to say. And it gets across in such a way because your voice is definitely, it's needed. And I think, you know, I don't know about you or the listeners, but I know for me, this has really blessed me in so many ways of just what we need to think about moving forward, the realities of it. Cause we can't, listen, we cannot depend on social media and the people that we follow, because we don't know if they're getting paid to say that. We don't know what, you know, posts are getting sponsored or pushed out there. We just don't know anymore. We can't trust those things. So we need to do the research.
Well, and if they don't know, you don't know what they don't know, right? I see a lot of well-intended influencers that have just reshared a fact that we all know as experts is completely unfounded.
Yeah.
And there's this level of responsibility for people, for influencers, when it's like, hey, if they're not in the fight against trafficking, go find who they're citing and make sure they're citing someone who is in the fight against trafficking.
Yeah.
I see people right now, they're just making their own memes and their own this. And I don't know if it's just to get their own Instagram likes. I don't know. I think they generally, most people have really good intentions. They have hearts to really want to help and spread the message. I just don't think they're looking at the right places, or they don't know how to research that methodology that was done. And so turn to the experts, see what they're posting about, learn from them, watch what they're putting out there. We have a great e-course called Find Your Lane. If you want to learn more about how to get in the fight against human trafficking, there's so many ways that you can fight this. We need you, even to do a small amount as a mom or dad that's raising a really, really strong son and daughter in a hypersexual world today. We need you. We need everyone to do their part. And so our course, Find Your Lane, is on our website, rebeccabender.org, and you can come take the quiz, find out what personality fits what lane. And we give you tons of resources for those specific lanes.
I know we have a lot of links today and books, so we will have everything below. So you guys, if you're missed it, you're like, oh my gosh, there are so many things. We'll have all the links below. You can check out Rebecca. Make sure you follow her on Instagram. And just thank you again for sharing your wisdom.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's always so fun to come back and share more than my story, because all of us are more than our story. So thank you.
Have you ever felt like you weren't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, thin enough, strong enough, worthy enough, or doing enough? If so, then my book, Know Your Worth, is for you. It's not uncommon to feel inadequate, whether it's issues surrounding your career, relationships, or finances. You will discover gems to apply to your own life as I take you through my journey of how I was able to overcome pain by realizing my worth wasn't tied into things or people, but God. In my book, Know Your Worth, I will show you how to stop settling for relationships that do nothing but cause you pain, how to refuse to settle for anything less than God's best for your life, and how to recognize that no matter what your past looks like, it doesn't have to be your future. Go to jessicahoddle.com/books to get a copy of Know Your Worth today.